Good morning. I'm all messed up. I'm all sad about the sandwich not being here. I don't remember why, but last night I was trying to think, do they have Steak and Shake here? And for some reason in my diluted, I think I had too much going on last night, I was thinking there was some sermon illustration that was going to go with Steak and Shake. But today we drove by it and all I could think of was, a steak burger sounds really good. No illustration out of Steak and Shake. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak here this morning. You've got such a good pastor and speaker that it seems weird that you'd take him out of the pulpit to throw me up. I was trying to remember the last time I preached yesterday, and I don't know how long ago it's been. I used to preach every week. I preached every week for 7, 8, 9 years. But it's amazing how much rust you get on those speaking skills when you only speak once every other year or so. I do appreciate the opportunity to be here. I think I tell you this every time I'm here. You've been very supportive of the work that I do in the Youth Advisory Committee and the Turning Point Youth Ministries, and I thank you for that. You've always been open to us coming to do our training seminars, and yesterday was a real training seminar, but it was also a practice one for Seth and I as we try to get our material straight, because my boss would like me to take it on the road to several other places this year. So not only did we get to train some people, but those people, when I read the reviews on the way home, I'll get to find out what we did right, what we did wrong. Now, right and wrong is a reminder for me of childhood. Probably because I did a lot. I was always in trouble. Nothing juvenile delinquent-like. In my family, the one who was in trouble, me, did stuff that in a lot of families now wouldn't even be noticed. But I remember a lot of friction between my brothers and I. My older brother Mark and I had a lot of friction, but once in a while we would get together to mess with my younger brother Tony. And some of you know Tony, he's from the Hedrick Church. The thing that stands out in my mind that we did to him once was Mark and I guess we were tired of him hanging around us for the day, and we'd go out to this garage we had. And this garage was one that you couldn't park a car in. It was on a hill. We're pretty sure if you pull a car into it, it would have gone down the hill. There was a little loft in that garage, and we could go up there, but Tony, because he was a little guy, wasn't allowed up in the loft. So for whatever reason, maybe the sun was too hot, I really don't know, we decided to tell Tony that we were, after we came back from that loft, that we had been replaced. We were aliens, and John and Mark were on this other planet. We spent all our time talking in a monotone voice. I guess we really didn't know what aliens should sound like, so we told him we were aliens. That was as creative as we got. We weren't all that creative. And really, the details of what we did and everything else aren't that important. The strange thing is, I'm pretty sure Tony still thinks that we're aliens. That's just the way it goes. You know, a lot of times between the siblings, obviously, there's difficulty. There can be pushing back and forth. There also is often difficulty between the generations. We talked a little bit yesterday about different generations and how they react to the generation above or behind them. There's often a distrust or a feeling of annoyance towards the generation on either side. And it's important to me, as somebody who works with young people and works with youth workers, to try to figure out how to avoid that. To try to get around some of that struggle between the generations and the struggle between the people and the churches. We spent a lot of time yesterday talking about youth worker issues, and the first one we talked about is always the most important one, our relationship with God. Before anything else in ministry, I've got to have a relationship with God. I might be able to help some people out. I might be able to give some people some direction in life without having a relationship with God. But I'm going to give them much better direction and point them on the right road much easier if I'm having a good relationship with God. My relationship with God is my first responsibility as a teacher. It's my first responsibility as a youth coordinator. And it's even my first responsibility as a husband and father. Before I can really show the love of God to my wife and my child, I've got to love God in the first place. It's that love for Him through which all other love flows. Yes, people who don't love God can have love in their hearts, but I think the best and purest love comes from those who do love God. I want to talk to you today from a text that is often a favorite for youth ministry. But the reason it's a favorite for youth ministry is because they only usually read part of the verse. And it's in 1 Timothy 4. This comes up over and over again when you are talking about youth ministry, because Paul is talking to Timothy, who is a young man, and he's giving him a little instruction about how people should look at you. Don't let anybody look down at you because you are young. That's the part we always tell students, or students tell each other. Don't let anybody look down at you because you're young. But let's read the whole text. 1 Timothy 4, starting with verse 11. I'm going to read from the New International Version. You can follow along in whatever version you want, but I'm talking. So, 1 Timothy 4:11 says, "Command and teach these things. Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for believers in speech, in life, in love, in faith, and in purity. Until I come, devote yourself to the public reading of Scripture, to preaching and to teaching. Do not neglect your gift, which was given you through a prophetic message when the body of elders laid their hands on you. Be diligent in these matters. Give yourself wholly to them so that everyone may see your progress. Watch your life and doctrine closely. Persevere in them, because if you do, you will save both yourself and your hearers." Now, if you're listening there, you probably can see why a lot of young people love that first part of that verse. Don't let anybody look down on you because you are young. That was my favorite verse for quite a while. Somebody only told me the first part, and I never bothered to look to see what the rest of it said. I eventually had to look and find that there's more to it than just don't let them look down on you. It's about why they're not going to look down on you. I want to, that most important is the line that follows that phrase. It says not just don't let anybody look down on you because you are young, but set an example for believers in speech, in life, in love, in faith, and in purity. It's not about simple respect. It's about living a life that others are going to respect. Live a life that others will see and emulate. Living in such a way that people will see Christ in us. Watching those things that we teach and making sure that we teach the truth. And he says at the end that persevering in these matters, we need to persevere in these matters so that those around us will see our progress and follow our example. That's a good call for us to heed, obviously. You can probably say that, you can pretty much say that about anything you read from a pulpit. That's a good call to heed. So I believe that heeding this call is going to help one of the big problems in the church and one of the problems that I face on a regular basis. And that's the exodus of young people from the church when they reach adulthood. I don't know if you've noticed, but in churches across the United States, a whole lot of young people, when they hit adulthood, they disappear. They're not interested. They've never got a connection to the church. They've never gotten a connection to God through that church. And so they often disappear when they reach adulthood. We, as the Youth Advisory Committee, have been trying to address that issue within my church so that we can learn some things that will help other churches to hold on to young people. I guess in that sense, my church is being set up as a lab, and I'm not sure if that's fair to them or not, but it's working quite nicely. What we've tried to do is take hold of those people in that 18 to, I think we called it 18 to 35, range, and try to do some redirecting of them. I told them yesterday that it was like taking one more shot at using youth ministry to help bring them in and connect them to God. Some people that disappear when they reach adulthood have grown up in Christian homes, with Christian leaders as parents, with teachers and Sunday school superintendents as their parents, and they've been in church for all or most of their lives. I was one of those people. My dad was in Bible college when I was born, and also I think he was preaching in Lombard, Illinois at the same time. And so from the first day I came home from the hospital, I was a guy who went to church. And that's just the way it was, and I never knew anything else. One of the things that can happen to somebody like that is they can look at church and they can look at God as something that's average, something that's just part of life. That's just the way it is. And not take hold of God, and not take hold of the truths that God gives to us, not take hold of the teachings and the calls that he has for us, because it's just commonplace to us. I've been in church almost every Sunday of my life. And I'd say only the last several years have I realized that this is for me. It's not just because I want to, that I'm supposed to show up. It's not just because that's what we're told to do. It's because I'm going to learn something there. I'm going to fellowship with other believers. I'm going to get a connection with someone, and I'm going to hear from God through a speaker, through a song. We call the people like me that have grown up in the church and never grabbed hold of faith as a young person, we call that a church kid. Sometimes we call that a secondhand faith. They inherited faith from their parents. I inherited faith from my parents. I'll quit saying they. It was me. I grew up in a faith situation, in a home that sought God, that did devotions at the table, that all the things that you consider right for a parent to do. And I still consider them right for a parent to do. But I found that until I seriously considered giving up that faith, I couldn't really take hold of that faith with both hands and live it. Until I seriously considered giving up that faith and living without that faith, I couldn't take hold of it for real. It was Dad's faith. It was Mom's faith. Now I'm happy to say it's my faith. It's my growing faith. It's not a perfected faith. It's an incomplete faith, but it's a growing faith. I have a question, the question that I continue to ask myself, and I'm going to pose it to you also, is what are we going to do to stop this exodus from the church? What can we do to connect students and really young adults and older adults? Some of you might still be church kids. You might still have a secondhand faith. What do we do to connect these people, like me, to the church and to Christ for a lifetime? Well, I know my focus is youth ministry, so I'm going to tell you what we came up with for ourselves. And I think it will help you with your young people, but it'll also help you with anybody who's still holding on to a secondhand faith. First, we understand, just as Timberland has, that we need to understand what the purpose of our church is. And the purpose for youth ministry and in the Church of God and at Turning Point Youth Ministries is we figured out that we need to work to produce contemplative Christians, in other words, Christians who actually contemplate, think about what they're doing, contemplative Christians who are active in ministry, in evangelism, in fellowship, in worship, and in discipleship. If you've ever heard of a purpose-driven concept, that's the five purposes of the New Testament church. You read all through the commands of the New Testament, you really can boil them down to those five things. Worship, fellowship, evangelism, discipleship, and which one did I miss? And ministry. If we're aiming to produce students like this, these are not going to be Christians that have merely heard of the truth or heard of and been in contact with faith, but Christians who process what they hear and see, consider its impact on them and on their faith, and continue to seek God throughout their lives. This is what we're aiming to produce. The programs that are offered by our churches and by Turning Point and by you individually need to focus on bringing about changes, or as I like to say, turning points, in the lives of students and the youth workers. The Turning Point is still a relatively new concept for us. We just named ourselves last year to Turning Point Youth Ministries. And the whole idea behind that is that going through life as a Christian, I'm going to continuously find points in my life that I've got to make a decision and turn. I've got to say, I don't think I'm quite right in this area, and make an adjustment. Often we look at faith as black and white. We look at it as not saved, saved. Apart from Christ and with Christ. But I would say, and I would tell you, and I hope that you would believe, that there is more to that process. There is definitely apart from Christ and with Christ. But when you cross over that line to with Christ, there's a whole lot of space there to grow into. There's a whole lot of area there for people from all stages of faith, all levels of maturity in faith. One way I believe that we can stem the tide of departing students is to choose to stop pretending. I spent a lot of time talking about this yesterday in the seminar. We do a great disservice to students if we pretend that we have it all together when we don't. if we pretend that we think everything is fine when it isn't fine, if we pretend that we don't have doubts, and if we pretend we don't have sin, we have doubts, we have struggles, we have sins. I talked about the disservice. We do the disservice when we try to set up this image of a Christian as being somebody who absolutely has no doubts, and every time there's anything wrong, they just, they just quote a Bible verse and keep on walking with a smile. That might not be true. That Bible verse is a big help. But the pretending that nothing is wrong is a big detriment. And here's why. When we set up an image, we set up this picture of someone of faith as having rock solid faith and never wavers no matter what terrible things happen to their family or their children, no matter what weird things are going on in their mind, whatever, no matter what situation faces them, we set up an image that they're going to be rock solid no matter what all the time. We really set up an image that they can't live up to. And in fact, we can't live up to. I've talked with some people who've gone through things in their lives that caused them a great deal of doubt of God. And they weren't able to work through that and connect to God again until they started to think through that doubt. You know, when I said I couldn't have that faith, that secondhand faith, be mine until I considered giving it up, when we look at our doubts, when we consider our doubts and try to work through them, there's some sense where you're wondering, do I still believe that God is with me? I think we have to take the time to go through those doubts instead of just saying no. Honestly, there's a part of me that just says, because I know how it's going to end, it's going to be on the other end, I'm going to say, yes, God is still with me. I sometimes say I'm going to ignore my doubts. Just because I know in the end, yes, God is there. But it is important for students, it's important for us, to be able to not just hide from our doubts, not just push them aside, but to actually look at them and think about them and work through them. And I think when we can set up an atmosphere in our church that allows somebody to have doubts, allows somebody to struggle, that allows somebody to stand up during prayer time and say, my 3-year-old, they think she might have cancer, and I'm really feeling mad at God. And rather than jumping on that person, saying, how can you say that we could let that person have some time to be mad at God, but show her the love of God all the way through. That somebody can stand up in a congregation and say, you know, the things I just saw over this weekend, I'm not sure that there really is a God. And that instead of attacking, instead of stepping away and running from that person, that we can spend some time with that person and help them through their anger or their bitterness or whatever it was that they saw, instead of pushing it to the side and hiding it. And when we do this, when we set up an atmosphere like that, this generation that's coming behind us gets to see real people. Gets to see people with real struggles and real doubts. And what I found is I get a much better connection and relationship with students when they can see who I really am. And they get a much better connection with Christ when they can accept those doubts and move forward, when they can work through them and move forward. That veneer, that plastic picture on the outside of my face when I'm trying to pretend that something doesn't bother me, that might be okay for a little while, but it doesn't help in the long run. I think I've gotten a long way from my notes because I got to a piece of the subject that really makes me, I don't know, my blood moves faster. I just want to say, Paul was calling Timothy, what he was calling Timothy to was not a life of pretending, but a life that was an example for others, of faith and impurity, not impurity and impurity. I say that again. Faith and purity, that's better. He was calling him to a life of faith and purity, calling him to be an example. And I think within that example, we want to show people who we are. And not just the plastic John. Although plastic John looks better, his hair stays in place and he doesn't have anything under his armpits. Plastic John is fake. I prefer real John, but I'm not sure if I can honestly say I always prefer real John. Sometimes Plastic John is more fun to be with. He doesn't complain about stuff. But I'm a real John. And my connection with other people and my connection with God is so much better when I show who I really am. I think another step towards changing the situation of students disappearing from the church is to emphasize the application of truth, and hold with me here, the application of truth rather than mere content. I find our churches and our church as a denomination is great at teaching the truth. At times, when we teach the truth, we forget to say why it matters. Or we say the only reason it matters is because it is truth. But often there's a deeper message to that truth that should mean that I'm going to do something different with my life. It often means that I'm going to have a different look at things and a different look at the Bible when I'm reading it. It often means something's got to change in what I do. Still throws me off to drink that Notre Dame. It's very good. Sometimes it means that that instead of just learning that this truth is a truth, I have to learn why it matters for life. And I have to teach why it matters for life. And the reason I said, stay with me here, sometimes when I tell somebody that I have to talk about the application truth of truth instead of just truth itself, it looks like they're digging in their bag for a rock to throw, because it sounds on the surface like I might be attacking truth. All I'm attacking is when I've done this for years, when I just teach a truth and just leave it there and think everybody's going to figure out what to do with that. And instead, we need to be able to teach a truth and help somebody figure out why it matters for their lives. I'm looking at my sermon. Yesterday in the youth worker seminar, you start to run long and you look at paragraphs that you can cut out. I just did that right now. I'm running long, so I'm looking where to cut out and get to the right points. Some things are hard to change once you get into a certain mode. I do more seminars now than I do sermons. Let me stay right here. The last place I've got here to address this situation is in the area of outlets, in the area of what do I do with my faith. The church needs to provide challenging outlets for worship, for ministry, for service. Challenging outlets, not just basic, you can do this little thing and that'll help the church. We need to offer some things that will challenge people. I always smile when I see Rachel walk up to the front, because I've done the children's sermons, and I know those are a challenge. My church, when we do the children's sermons, I swear that they bring in more children for that sermon than are actually sitting in the church. And they have a room somewhere. They bring them out and make the person who's doing the sermon's eyes stick out. And in that church, they bring out a can, and they open this can, and one of the kids has put something in it, and you've got to make up a children's sermon from what you're looking at. These things like having, and Rachel, sorry to use you as an example without telling you, these things like having a student do what looks like a simple ministry, I think those are part of what we can offer to help connect a person to the church for a long term. I've found that times that I'm a lot better at challenging someone to minister than I am at providing them an opportunity to minister. And I've got to change that for me. I don't know if how it is in this church. If you have a lot of challenges to ministry and never tell somebody, here's one that we've got that you can jump in with. But too often we do that. We offer minor opportunities and we get some minor response. But I have found that many students jump and tackle a possibility when it's a challenging opportunity. They will jump at the chance to go do something that I think I would never do that in 1,000 years. And because it's a challenge and they want a challenge, they'll jump at it. These type of outlets help to cement a relationship between that student and you and Christ and his church. So I'll wrap it up here. I think there's great promise in the generation that's following, the generation that I'm working with right now. I told the group yesterday that I've seen examples of faith in that group that really at times dwarf my faith. They make my faith look little. And there's not a lot of people that make me look little. But faith-wise, it can be done pretty easily. It's encouraging to see students take hold of all that God has called Christians to do and to be. And if you're already working to address this need of attachment for students to the church, I just say, God bless you. If you haven't looked at that, if you're not working at that, and I say this to the whole church, don't look to the elder or the pastor or the board to figure this out. If you aren't looking at the issue of how to attach students to the church permanently, I would encourage you to get started. Because I think it will help to cure some of the ills that we look at for the rest of the church. When the students are disappearing, you're also going to see ills in the Middle Ages, in the Upper Ages, in the young marrieds. I find that one piece of the church being unhealthy really affects the whole church. So again, if you haven't looked at this issue, I'd encourage you to examine the ministry of your church and see where it can better address the needs of students. The generation that follows is going to benefit your work, and I believe that the church as a whole will feel the blessing and that the kingdom of God will be blessed by it. Thanks.